Welcome, friends, to Season 2 of the Balancing Act podcast, a program whose effort is to help any and all become more psychologically flexible using the ideas and principles of acceptance and commitment therapy. I am Danny, and with the help of Julio, we bring this to you as a helping hand, as an act of kindness, because let's just face it, we all need just a little bit of help in our own balancing act. Episode 33, Mediocre. Hey there, this is the Balancing Act podcast. I am Danny, that is Julio over there, and I'm actually pointing at him as if you can see me actually pointing at him, even though we are communicating in a strictly non-visual medium. But it has been quite a while since you have heard from us. I feel like Julio and I are like that rock band named Tool, where we put out an album about every 5 to 10 years. But I promise you all that this episode will not be in the cadence of the Fibonacci sequence. And I feel like only maybe 12 of you might have gotten that ridiculously inside joke, but whatever. We're feeling kind of finicky today with those inside jokes. Several reasons why it has been so long since we put out an episode. All good reasons. I have been extremely, extremely busy in my private practice. My calendar has been just pure chaos, very little wiggle room these past few months. And speaking of calendars, Julio is a hockey dad. And his son is becoming quite the prospect in hockey, which has swallowed up his weekends. Who knows, maybe in about 8 years from now, while his son is playing for the Tampa Bay Lightning, we can listen to this episode and just think about the old days. And this will be the year that it all began. And lastly, I simply just don't want to force out content. I get ideas for episodes all the time, but I feel like sometimes the ideas need to be, you know, inspiring enough for actually us to sit down and make it something that can positively impact people. So luckily for this episode, the stars are aligned. We had an idea and our availabilities matched. And here we are on a Friday night recording. Quick disclaimer before we continue. This episode may possibly rub some people the wrong way. I hope not. I hope my intention is that it doesn't come across judgmental. It's definitely not my intent. You'll see when we actually get into the content. That being said, we just want to thank you all for listening. Hopefully you share this episode because, as we always say, sharing is caring. It means a lot to us. We know that time is an unredeemable resource, and the fact that you would actually spend time to listen to this content that Julio and I put together means a lot to us, and we definitely appreciate it. If you want to reach out to us, you can. There are different ways you can do that. You can send us an email at thebalancingactpodcast@gmail.com. You can also find us on Instagram at thebalancingactmiami, and you can send us messages through there also. Quick recap. Last episode, which was many, many moons ago, we discussed the algebra of suffering. We talked about the ancient equation of suffering, which is that expectations minus reality equals disappointment. And how diffusing from expectations can remedy a lot of our disappointment in our everyday lives. And today, we're going to talk about cell phones. And I admit, as I said earlier, I may anger some people with today's episode. I apologize beforehand. It's not my intent. To be honest, I'm going to be guilty of some of the things that I talk about today, too. So I don't want you to think that I'm, you know, only calling out people on the outside. I know I'm part of this tribe that's hooked on the phones. So I hope you understand that part of me ranting is just me trying to figure out how do we get here with cell phones, and more importantly, how can we possibly get out and be more psychologically flexible. Ultimately, today I want to discuss how psychologically inflexible we have become with social media, and how we instantly gratify ourselves with false displays of perfection while avoiding the mundane that also exists in our everyday life. Today we talk about the importance of embracing the reality that sometimes some things in our lives are not like-worthy, but are mediocre, and that's just okay. Questions. How many times do you check your phone in a day? How many minutes a day are you separated from your phone? How important is it for you to feel accepted by others? What are your motivations to post certain things on social media? What are your motivations to look at social media? How truly representative is your social media life with your actual everyday life? Would people recognize you in your everyday life? How many likes is enough likes on your social media? How many followers are enough followers on your social media? Is there something missing in your everyday life that you hope to get with social media? And is it working? Perfume, Nickelback, and hashtag no filter. Perfume. In Mark Madsen's book, The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck. Am I allowed to curse on? Yeah, we can curse, right? I mean, there's no way to not talk about that book without cursing, right? But anyway, that book is a really good read. I highly recommend it. There's a part of the book early on when he discusses how chemists make perfume. He mentions that there is this one incident in which they find a particular scent from a flower that smells amazing. And they figured this scent will make us millions of dollars, right? But if we can only magnify how delicious this scent smells and optimize it. So what do? So they, you know, they decide we are going to mess with it in a laboratory. Sounds like the beginning premise of a new Last of Us series on HBO, right? So these chemists, they decide, how about we do this? Let's break down the chemical composition of this particular scent and look at all the different pheromones it has. And from there, we decide which one of those pheromone scents is the worst. And we remove it, right? So like say there's like 26 different scents. They compare all 26 and they find the one that smells the worst, right? Which in this particular case, they find one that basically smells like dog turd, right? So they say, perfect. We remove that one, the one that smells bad, and then we'll put them all back together again, the other 25 that smell awesome, right? And now we'll have this like super strain of like delicious smelling perfume, right? That's pretty logical. It's a good move, right? But guess what happened? The new engineered scent, which no longer had the dog turd smelling ingredient, actually smelled much worse than what it smelled like when it had the actual dog turd pheromone in it. So some food for thought as we continue in these stories. Nickelback. So Nickelback is a Canadian band. You know, it's a, at least they were a Canadian band. Julio, is Nickelback still together?
I have no idea.
I'm not even sure they're still around. But somewhere, somehow, in some way, it became popular to hate on them. It became uncool to like Nickelback. I always wondered who was the person that got that viral spread against them going, because maybe it was an ex-girlfriend, I guess. I don't know. But whoever it was, they had a very effective way of making them uncool, right?
There's a documentary about it.
Is there? Oh, we need to plug that. Maybe we'll put it in the description when we post the podcast. So someone was able to make it viral. But somehow, whoever it was, they made it pretty much a well-known thing that, God forbid, you like Nickelback, right? So that being said, I have a confession. Don't judge me. I like Nickelback. If you guys can see Julio's face, he's a Seven Dust fan. He's giving me the side eye. But I don't really share that with others, I guess, until now, right? I guess I'm embracing this episode called Mediocre. But I do like Nickelback, and I normally don't share it with others. I don't advertise my affinity to Nickelback to anybody the same way that I might advertise to anyone that, you know, that's around, that I love the band U2 and I love Dave Matthews Band and I love Tool. But Nickelback, I stay pretty damn quiet about how much I like them, right? I edit that out of my public proclamations. And why is that? Am I really afraid of being judged by others for that? Or am I judging myself for liking them because the public perception is that it's just not cool to think that they are cool? How often do we do that? That we judge ourselves for something, so we edit it out of our public facade. As if by omitting it from the public social eye, we make ourselves more acceptable. But are we making ourselves more acceptable to others? Or are we really just making ourselves acceptable to ourselves? Is this a social acceptance kind of thing? Or a self-acceptance kind of thing? Are we editing the dog turd pheromones from our public persona due to self-judgment resulting in a less lovely perfume scent? And finally, hashtag no filter. Have you ever asked yourself why there's a need for people to use the hashtag no filter on a photo? Sometimes the hashtag is attached to a breathtaking photo of a sunset or of a sparkling pool in the backyard or on a selfie they posted. But why the no filter tag? Is it that important for us to deliver the message to whoever is seeing the image that, yes, I know this looks amazing, but I need you to know how amazing it is that this picture is so amazing without the use of filters. So then why are we using filters on other photos of landscapes, pools, and selfies? Because we feel like it needs a filter to be considered amazing? It needs that little extra oomph to get likes and reposts? Is that where we have arrived, that we are in need to emphasize the beauty of an image on our social media by letting people know that we didn't need to tweak this image? Does that mean that all the other images that don't have no filter hashtags were images that needed to be tweaked to be timeline worthy? Are we saying those other images were not quite good enough until we passed it through a few filters? How did we get here? And where are we going next? Approaching or avoiding mediocrity. So I'm old enough, unfortunately, to remember a time when cell phones were not a thing. Yeah, you heard someone maybe having one or someone having one in their car, which they're like big bricks, right? Did you have one, Julio? Like a big brick cell phone in the Mustang? No.
Right after.
But those people had, they were considered big shots. At least that's why what my 18-year-old brain thought at the time. There weren't cell phones, but there were beepers, and there were payphone booths. There's actually a sports bar near my house that still has a couple payphones by the bathroom. I wonder sometimes if when kids go to the bathroom if they get confused. I wonder what that big thing is there on the wall. But back in my day, there was no phone in your pocket that can also double as a camera. So like hell, when I went to concerts. Not Nickelback concerts, but when I went to concerts, I had to sneak in a disposable camera and to take pictures because it was unimaginable to ever have a phone that can also work as a wireless device that can take 12 megapixel photos of a performance. And there was no social media to post those types of pictures on, right? So it was a disposable camera it was. If you wanted people to know what you were up to, guess what you would do? You would call them from your home phone to their home phone. And if they were not home, you would beep them. And then they would call you from their home phone. And if your beeps were desperate enough and they weren't at home, they would probably ask somebody behind the counter at the bowling alley or wherever they were to use a landline to give you a call. I know it sounds incredibly bonkers, but it's true. Connection was by landline, and the phone was more of a tool to get you to meet up with your friends in person. If you wanted other people to know about what happened the night before, you would talk about it face to face. And the stories would slowly or organically bounce from person to person until more people found out what happened. But something has happened to us. Now we all have this smartphone in our pocket. Some people have two. I actually saw a woman, a security guard at the local mall the other day with three cell phones in her hand. Could not figure out why. But next time you walk into a public place, like a grocery store, a restaurant, a coffee shop, hell, even Julio's doing it, you'll notice that people are on their phones. They are melded to these things. They are not present. They are delving into something somewhere else and not in the moment or enjoying the person they are with. Like the chubby people in the movie WALL-E. It's, I'm not sure if you've seen that movie, but at the end, it's a scary and accurate imagery of these chubby people basically in these movable carts, and they're watching screens with like mechanical arms feeding them like slushy sodas. That was a prediction of what things are going to look like 200 years from now. And the scary thing is, I think we're on that road. Cell phones are technological miracles. They make it so easy for us to connect with others that we have forgotten how to heavy lift the art of true connections. Social media has upgraded followers to friends and has downgraded friends into followers in a matter of 10 years. Catherine Price, who wrote It's Time to Break Up with Your Phone, and she also wrote this other book called The Power of Fun, has a great name for our cell phones. She calls them WMDs, weapons of mass distraction. These little devices in our pockets are drug pushers, offering us small doses of dopamine desperate to keep us connected to the network and disconnected from real life. We are all targeted. What makes us easy targets? Our fascination with social media. Our desire to be noticed, acknowledged, accepted, revered, liked, followed, reposted. What are we seeking in our social media lives? Why are we only posting the fancy meals? The frosty beer on the table? Why are we only posting the perfect makeup job we pulled off? Why are we posting pictures with a pose that's literally called a candid pose to pretend we were not expecting the picture to be taken of us? Only to sort through 7 variations of that candid photo to see which one we will post. Why are we asking our friends for permission to post a picture they are in? hoping that the way they came out in the picture passes their standard for the immense number of 455 followers that will see them on Instagram. Why are we disconnecting from amazing vistas to post pics from our beautiful vacation getaways while still at the actual getaway, when getaway means to get away, not to bring the world along? Why the pictures of the brand new car? I get the whole, oh, I'm excited I got a new car pic. I get it. But why the every 3 days the picture of you adoring this beautiful car in this so-called candid picture leaning up against it? What are we trying to do with this? What has happened? Pictures of our workouts. What are we doing with this? Why are we taking 6 selfies before we find out that the one that we find acceptable to post? Why are we fragmenting ourselves into an ideal version for public consumption and then disregard the part of us that is not photogenic, the part of us that we find boring, the part of us that we find mundane? The pursuit of likes has made us addicted to notifications, seeking likes or hearts or thumbs ups or followers or reposts. But if we aren't posting the boring aspects of our lives, aren't we saying that that part of us is not likable, not followable? Makes you think, doesn't it? In applied behavior analysis, there are functions of behavior, and we break them up into 4 categories. There's one, which is seeking a tangible, typically in the pursuit of pleasure. Number 2, and there's no particular order, by the way. Number 2, seeking escape. Number 3, seeking attention. And number 4, sensory input. So social media, in my opinion, is an instantly gratifying back and forth between people posting who are seeking attention and people checking their feeds who are seeking escape from the world. It's just a psychologically inflexible game of digital tennis. And I get it, there's good use for social media out there. There's productive, value-driven, psychologically flexible use of social media as a tool. There's people making a difference with their social media and people benefiting, and God bless them. But man, there's a ridiculous amount of instantly gratifying, psychologically inflexible use of social media as a self-medication, further dividing us on dividing those who post, who continue to desperately post their idealized self, and fooling the consumers to think that this is normal life for other people, so my life must really suck. As the quote says so well, comparison is the thief of joy. So we are pursuing attention when we post. It's a short-lived high that we get with likes, reposts, and follows, but what is actually missing in our lives that this attention we seek on social media is trying to fill? Well, there are basically 6 categories of needs we have as individuals. Depending on how we grow up, we are kind of wired to prioritize some over others. These 6 are connection, belonging, self-expression, safety, autonomy, and purpose. My belief is that there is a generation, more than one really, that are hooked on attention as a desperate need to feel connection and belonging. At least for some. For others, it's that feeling of need for self-expression or safety, and there's others that need the sense of independence and purpose. But connection and belonging is an overriding one for social media. Again, I don't find anything wrong with it, as long as there's 2 other things going on. That we are also doing this in our real life, with people in the room with us, or in the classroom with us, or in the office with us, or at church with us, or at the gym with us, or on the team with us. Do it there too. Don't just do it on the phone or on the app. The other thing is, be all of you. Don't just put the idealized version of you, because to edit yourself into a version that is ideal for consumption means you believe that the part of you that is not ideal is unlovable, and it's unlikable, and unfollowable, and unworthy. And how is that healthy? How is that being psychologically flexible? What do you feel like if someone sees you in your everyday life? That they won't want to connect with you? Or that they'll exile you? Or threaten your belonging? Or they won't listen to you? Or take away your independence? Or take away your purpose? Is that where we have ended up in such a short amount of time with social media, afraid people will see all of us? Let's put the I back in Instagram. Let's put the me back in mediocre. It's time to embrace all elements of us, the good, the bad, the ugly. Self-judgment begets shame, and it's time. I will end this soapbox moment for myself, and hopefully I haven't angered you all too much, and I hope I've opened a few eyes, or at least shook you a little bit more awake, with this quote by Louis Giglio. This is from his book, Goliath Shall Fall. Social media can be a good thing when used well, but if social media is the place we get our value, then we're sunk. If we live for people's approval, we will die by their rejection. And now for the challenge. As we always do at the end of each and every episode, this is the time we challenge each of you to become active participants in your own life. Today, the challenge is to embrace the mediocre, to acknowledge that you can't spell mediocre without the word me. It's time to embrace and proclaim the average in our lives. Like a really subpar breakfast, or a really bad hair day. God knows I've had them. Or a dirty car. Or maybe you just didn't really get your best outfit put together. Or maybe your eyes are half closed on a selfie. Or maybe your shirt is wrinkled. Or maybe you're just not feeling like you're in the mood to go to work that day. So a shot of you miserable about having to be stuck in traffic. Or maybe you missing a lift at the gym. Or maybe that dish served to you at the restaurant that looks more like a Waffle House rather than a gourmet dish. These are the things of the mundane. These are actually parts of our lives also. Not only the highlight reels that we keep posting. Our lives are everything, not just that highlight reel. Remember that. Love all of your life, not just the idealized little moments that everyone seems to post on social media, because if we run away from the mediocre, then we are running away from parts of our lives that are very, very real. So my challenge is, for the month of May, each day of May, post a picture of mediocrity in your life, boring little meh moments that we all have, and post it on your social media to honor them, each day of May, all 31 days, and hashtag each picture, hashtag Mediocre, M-A-Y-D-I-O-C-R-E. And we can all embrace the 31 days of mediocre. Let us embrace the mundane as well as the amazing. Let's embrace the boring as well as the exciting. Let us embrace the underwhelming as well as the overwhelming. Let's embrace the bland as well as the spicy. Let's embrace all of our lives. Thank you so much for listening. Hope you participate. And who knows, maybe Mediocre May becomes a viral hit. This is the Balancing Act Podcast. I am Danny. That is Julio. Take care.